Natural History Project of John Yeong On Kim by Daisy Chun Rhodes, dated July the 11th, 1994. John, can you please tell me about your parents, when your father arrived?
Well, he came in about 1904. And my mother came in 1912.
In 1912. When your father arrived, do you know which plantation he went to?
He went to Ola. He always had mentioned about Camp 9 that he was in Koksang.
Mm-hmm.
Ola is in a big island.
In his talking to you about his plantation days, has he told you what work was like, what his hours were, and what type of work he did?
Well, the main thing was long hours from sunrise and practically to sunset, and making about $1 a day. And he did all kind of work in the fields, more as a laborer. And at times they were working on a contract basis by loading so many loads for a few extra dollars.
Was he a pineapple or a sugarcane worker?
Sugarcane worker.
Has he mentioned whether or not he lived in a Korean camp, or whether or not he had lived in a mixed camp, and what conditions were like then?
It must have been in a Korean camp, and that's why I had mentioned earlier, living in a Koksang, and that's where their room and board. And he used to tell me about the fights he used to have with the fellow workers, because the owner that ran that Koksang had cooked all the practically the same simple food and no kogi or anything fancy. So he found out that the proprietor told my father that so many people are not paying their monthly share for their food. So he used to chase after them and tell them that, you know, pap mungnung ko, you have to pay the ton.
So yeah. Your father worked in the Koksang?
No, not in the Koksang, but when he went there, the only thing he ate was practically the same thing over and over, just kimchi and rice, kimchi and rice. So there were no meat or any other dish. So then he asked the woman that ran the Koksang, and she told him that so many people are not paying their regular monthly share of the cost. So he went after them, and he even had to beat some of them to pay that woman so that they can have better panchan.
Yeah. So when your mother arrived approximately 8 years after your father arrived, can you mention perhaps and elaborate and tell us how it is that your mother was introduced to your father through picture, or your father to your mother as through picture?
Well, when my mother came in at the immigration station, then my father came there with a minister. I don't know, but I think you know the one of the minister's children, that Hong Chi Bum, that Naomi Hong's father, was a minister that married them. But then when she saw my father, actually saw his face, she cried and she wanted to go back home, mainly because the picture didn't show all of those, you know, smallpox, they called that, puka puka. So when my mother saw his actual face, she cried and she wanted to go back home. Then finally, she had to get over it and had accepted him. Where they got married, I don't know, but the only thing that I can think of is that they didn't have mentioned to me. And since my father went there with the minister, Reverend Hong, probably he must have just got married in that immigration station.
Mm-hmm. Then where did they go?
Then they went to live up Nuanu with a family. That's Dr. Yu's parents, Yu Dong Min. I remember that as a child, I was told by my parents and their daughter, Minnie Dunn. She's Minnie Dunn now. She used to tell me that I used to run around their garden, vegetable garden, and climbing on those papaya trees and practically killing all of the plants, running around with only a shirt on and no pants. I said, Minnie, I don't remember those things. Of course, I was born in Nuanu, a place called Jack Lane.
Do you know who delivered you?
I don't know his English name, but a Korean woman that was a midwife, Paul Kang's mother. She was the one that had helped my mother during the childbirth.
So all of the children that were born were delivered by midwives?
Except the last two. Lloyd was born in Queens Hospital on April the 29th, 1920. Then my youngest sister, Young Hee, was born in Queens Hospital December 10th, 1930.
What did your father do in Nuanu to be able to feed the growing family and tell me about the house that you lived in?
You mean as the children were all born, or mm-hmm. the earliest stage?
From the earliest stage until and as much information as you can about
well,
your
at family. The earliest stage. As I had mentioned, I was born in Jack Lane, Nuanu. Then from there, my father used to be a farmer raising flowers, and go out paddling in a neighborhood. Then from that, I suppose the income wasn't sufficient. So he had a job at the Oahu Cemetery. At Nuanu Cemetery, and he was a grave digger. Then at times he had worked in a crematory. Then he used to tell me that, you know, when you look through the peeping glass while the incinerator is going, when you see the body that was placed in there would curl up like a bacon, and at times it almost seems as though that the person had risen up as though he was sitting down. Then go back. And the next thing you know afterwards is nothing but ashes, and most of the bone has already been blown away into the ashes in the fire, then the skull. But the bigger bones, like your knee and all that, still small, little. but majority of the rest is already gone. Well, that's the part that he had worked in, as a digger and working in a crematory. But the worst job was when they have to exhume the body to be shipped to the mainland or to the Orient or wherever their family wants to move them to. They had a box lined with copper sheet metal, and put that exhumed body in there and seal it, resolder it. But he said that the sight of it is terrible, especially when they have to exhume the body when it was only about 1 or 2 months later. It's a worse condition too. Then from there, as a grave digger, while those trees are still there, as you go in the main cemetery, the roads that road divides the two halves of the cemetery, the shower trees were planted by my father. And he used to tell me that I used to go out with him while he was working. Then he saw me climbing on all of those monuments. You know, those olden days, they have monuments that's about 8 feet high. So he told me that I practically climb on every one of them. Then that from there on, then he had worked in the barber shop at Young Hotel. And they had, at that time, they were the only one that was using the hand clippers, olden days hand clippers, no motor clippers, than a shears. You know, when you close it, the two ends bang and it makes noise. Huh? So they had tied linen twine in between the two ends where that scissors handle meets, so you won't hear that metal clinging sound. So that's why they had mentioned, called that place the Silent Barbershop. Then from there, he had worked his own barbershop after so many years. Then as I recall, I was probably about 9 or 10 years old then he had his own barbershop. Then after a year or so, he had worked for Coin Furniture Company as an upholster and making mattresses. Then he had worked with Coin for a good 10 years or so. Then after that, he had started his own repair shop doing upholstery work and manufacturing Pune's handy couch, they call that the Pune's. Then we sold the Pune's to, at that time it was only known as C.S. Waugh and Brother, not sons. The two brothers were the owners on King Street. Then Asahi Furniture used to be on Everleigh Street, across from the old Oahu Railway Station. Those were the two places that we had supplied them with Pune's at wholesale. Then from there, after that, we had moved up to Lusitania Street. That's a punch bowl site. Then the thing that I can remember is that my father had rented two store spaces, one for his shop and one for us to live in. He had just divided the room up, made his own partitions, and the only thing that they, as long as there was a place with a lavatory, then a sink was outside in the walkway. And then I recall that my mother was in a labor pain for Lloyd's birth, but she suffered so much. Finally, the midwife told me to get in contact and call the social worker. At that time was He Su Huang, I think you know her. So called her, then she had made arrangements by calling at Queens Hospital. So for me to bring my mother to Queens Hospital. Then the same thing happened to, 5 years later, same thing happened to the time when my sister Young Hee was under labor. So she had a difficult time. So then we took her to Queens Hospital. And that was all under social welfare. Then we lived on School Street. Then the rent of that house was $18 a month for a three-bedroom house. Then my father was in a hospital for about 2.5 months with a gallstone or gallbladder. Then they still have the stone, three big stones, like what they use for mixing in concrete, cement. And during that time from social welfare, they were paying us $25 a month. So by paying $18 for the rent, there was only $7 left to live for a month. So that's why I had to play hooky from school. Sell morning paper in the morning, and during the day, I made a shoe shine box, go out on Hotel Street on paydays for the Navy used to get paid 5th and the 20th. The GIs used to get paid those days only once a month.
How old were you then?
Oh, about 11 years old. So that's how I practically helped my father to support by bringing home $3.50 per day. From there, I bought meat or dried caught fish or fresh fish. Or those days, you know, the Koreans, the great eaters of pig head, buying by the whole head, and I only paid about 50 to 75 cents for the head. And buying an aku that was about 5 pounds, I paid only 50 cents.
You paid it?
Yeah, I paid it.
Because your father was in the hospital. Yeah. So in other words, you became like the head of the household to help your parents at that time.
Yeah.
Now, was that School Street part of the Palamas, outside of the Palamas settlement?
Oh, that was way out from Palamas settlement. Well, since mentioning about Palamas settlement, on School Street where we used to live, there was a playground, and the next property was a warehouse for the city and county carpenter's workshop. And there were a lot of wood scattered all around the yard. So while we were playing in that yard, I had tripped over a piece of board with my left foot, right foot, then the sharp pointed end had gone into, you see this here, the scar? There's a scar here. I had the splinter was about an inch and a quarter long. So from there, that was on School Street, Palamas settlement, the old Palamas settlement was on King Street. Near, today they have that, what they call the Capilano Boulevard, Dillingham Boulevard. At that time they did not have that Dillingham Boulevard, just King Street going up straight, and Liliha Street is just the opposite. So from there, after the surgery, I had to walk home limping on one foot. And even before that, while we were living up Liliha, Punui, I would say that's about five 6 miles from Punui to the coin furniture where I was attending a school.
And what was the name of the school?
Well, the main people that was running that at that time was the Chinese Christian Church. It was on 4th Street. If you know where the old Princess Theater used to be. Well, like, right opposite of that was the old first Chinese Christian Church. See, those days, the car fare was, rapid transit fare was only 5 cents one way. Even that, my father couldn't afford. So I walked from Punui all the way down to Beritania and 4th Street. Rain or shine, and I was more happy going to school on rainy days because the water that running down alongside the gutter used to walk in the rain and kick the water, you know, like
have
what
fun.
All kids do even today.
But the Chinese Christian school, Chinese Christian school.
Christian school, but it was more something like the school that they have for these young kids, like day school like.
What was school like for you that you had to go to school every day? What did they do at school?
Well, to tell you the truth, that I wasn't able to be accepted at the kindergarten at the age of 6 because I couldn't answer questions that the teacher or the principal had asked me, because I couldn't speak English, because at home I only had spoken Korean with my parents. So even at age 6 they didn't accept me in kindergarten. So the following year then I went to kindergarten. And that's how I got a late start in grammar school. And I didn't finish high school. I just went up to the junior high, the Central Junior High School, that's located on Emma Street. So, like, thank God that all of our kids graduated and finished high school and colleges, except our son. Probably he was like the father, that he didn't care to go to college. So the only thing what he had done was to volunteer and join the Air Force. And from there he had learned the trade and what he's doing until today. And I think he's working with Hawaiian Airlines now for almost 30 years service. So then he tells us, why didn't mom or dad force me to go to college? I said, how can we force anyone? You just said you didn't want to go, so we just say, okay, that's the way it is. Who won't force you? But today he keep on telling us that you people should have forced me to go to high school. I said, John, don't worry. College doesn't mean that much in a blue-collar trade. I said, I've got friends that graduated junior high and high school and college. But they were making less money than I was making. The same thing with you, with your trade as an instrument mechanic for the airlines. I bet your friends that finished college, lots of them are not making even one half of what you're making per year. So you didn't lose anything. So then I said to myself, I didn't lose anything. I said, Jack, do you remember what you told me? He said, Dad, don't worry. He said, as long as you know how to sign your name, you'll get along. How true.
Yeah. Well, getting back to your father and your mother, when you all lived in Lusitania and he began his own furniture business, and making punes. How did your mother manage in the house? How did she cook, and how did she manage the daily schedule for all of the children? Can you kind of tell me all that?
See, she used to help my father mainly doing the sewing for the cushions and stuff for upholstery. She used to do a lot of those work.
Was that by hand?
Hand, and had the foot paddle machine first time. Then later on, then my father bought a second hand, they call that the tailor machine. And from that, my mother had learned how to use that. And then she spent more time to help my father. Then when it came for cooking, mealtime, I used to help my mother. Even as a kid, I used to help her doing the cooking for her. Of course, those days it was nothing fancy. As long as we had dried codfish, after it was sliced and soaked in the water for overnight so that it won't get too salty, then the only thing we had to do, what I had to do was just light the kerosene stove and put the frying pan, the thick skillet, put the frying pan on and help her fry. Then whatever kimchi that she had made, I just take it out from the refrigerator. In those days, no refrigerator, just an ice pack refrigerator. And well, that's more of a helper for my mother. And with that experience, it's paying off now. With my wife in the present condition, I used to watch her, how she used to cook too. And right along, I used to watch my mother how to make different food and yang yim and all that. And I'm thankful that it's paying off today. Then I'm helping her to do the cooking, do the housework, do the laundry.
Gauging by when your father and your mother arrived and they married and went off and began slowly to become independent in their own shop work, can you tell me how you all managed to live in your home there on Lusitania? You said there was two rooms.
Two store spaces.
Oh, two store spaces. Space. How large was the space that you all lived in?
Oh, I would say the store was about 30 feet wide and about 20 feet deep. So he had rented two store spaces like that. One for his business, and one store he just made temporary partitions, but not all the way to the ceiling. It's just like more or less like a room divider, like. So then the back portion where that sink was, made that into a combination of kitchen, dining, and everything. Dining
so
room.
Your mother did the laundry at the sink.
Yes,
also?
Yeah.
I notice here, can you begin to tell me, after you left school, how you slowly began to go off on your own? It says here that you worked with a paper company, you worked with an ice cream company. Can you slowly begin to tell me about how you began to leave home as a young man and get out into the environment in the workplace?
Well, that working in the paper company was more of a Honolulu paper company at that time. Was doing a lot of wholesale work, like supplying the butcher shops and all the different stores, wrapping papers and all of that. Well, I had worked over there in the warehouse and also making deliveries. Then in the ice cream factories, I used to work in a factory making those brownies that they call. It's just like a lollipop on a stick covered with a chocolate coating over it. That is made with the in the freezer room. The ice cream and all of that is dipped on the tray, 2 dozen of those lollipop-like, standing on a tray with the ice cream on top. Then we carry that and then dip them in a container of that burner that's going, keeping the chocolate soft and warm, to dip it in there, then lift it up about a couple of minutes, then put it on a rack. Then same time, I should be a delivery man too.
At the same time?
After the dipping of the chocolate, it's not a job that would be continuous. No, I was still single.
And were your parents asking you for help at that time, even if you were working and independent at that time?
Well, they didn't have to ask me, because I've seen it right along that my father needed that extra income to meet the payment of the store rent, and we had to have clothing and food and stuff. I have noticed that I had to help him financially, and that's the only way that I was able to.
At that time, as you helped your parents and your brothers and your sister began living in, as a growing family, were they required to go to Korean school?
Yeah, we all went to the Korean school.
Did you go to?
I went to the Korean school, and I was able to read even Hanmun before. So now the only thing that I can read is that simple Kungmun. But 70 years ago, I was able to read Hanmun too.
Which Korean school did you go to?
The Korean school that I went to was the first Methodist church that was on Punchbowl Street. Then the second one was after we moved, I went to the St. Luke's Episcopal Church, as at that time Mata Cho's father was a minister of that church, and he thought that my name was Yohani. My name is Yohan. So he told me that Johann in English is John. So he told me your name should be John. So from there on, I had used that word, name John.
But is John on your birth certificate?
It's on my birth certificate, John. Johann.
Now, as you continued on in life, did you continue and did your parents continue going to St. Luke's?
No, we had been going to the Methodist Church on 4th Street then. See, that building was cut up in sections, moved from Punchbowl Street onto 4th Street. Then we went to that Methodist Church, Korean Methodist Church. But those days, if you recall, even the church at Olive Avenue, where your home was, it was known as Korean Episcopal Church, ME Church. You recall that? That's how the Methodist churches were called at that time. But today, there are still, I think I notice about a couple of churches in Los Angeles, Methodist Episcopal Church. But I found out and learned that as of 1959, at the Episcopal Convention, they have decided, and the Methodists know now that they will go by as Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. The Episcopal mm-hmm. Church was Episcopal was left out. But then the thing is a long story, but the Christian denomination was either a Roman Catholic or the Anglican Communion. And Anglican Communion, well, we are considered as Anglican Catholics too. So at that time, the Methodist Church from that year on was cut off as the word Episcopal. But I think there's about two churches in Los Angeles still goes by Methodist Episcopal Church.
When did your parents move to Wahiawa?
They came in 1931.
Do you know why they moved to Wahiawa?
They moved in Wahiawa because my father wanted to come in Wahiawa to do business with the Schofield family, the officers' families, by repairing and upholstering their furniture. And at that time, I was at McKinley High School after I graduated from Central Junior High in 1931. And I was at McKinley, and I was on a football team. And in about a couple of weeks, we were supposed to leave the islands to go and play with a mainland college at that time. It was Brigham Young High School days. Then my father told me I had to quit school, come home, and leave to pick up furniture and delivery. So that's how I left McKinley High School after attending only about 3 months. I had to quit school. Then I came in Wahiawa. Mm-hmm.
Did your father have strict rules for you? Did he guide you with very strict rules regarding your behavior to him and to your mother? Or how did you learn to not even say, well, I don't want to go to Wahiawa, for instance? Well, what made you not, I mean, how did you decide, well, yes, Father, I will go with you? Was there a talk?
Well, he didn't force me. The only thing I made my voluntary move to come in because I feel as though that he needed my help because he has to go and pick up the job, and after the jobs were done, he has to deliver it back. So since he couldn't drive, so that's how I came in to Wahiawa.
In Wahiawa, and your father having associations with Schofield Barracks, were the war years productive for your father?
War years was really bad for him because then I had gone to work at Pearl Harbor in 1940, just before the war. Then my brother Jimmy and Young Dong, we all were working at the shipyard. So then during the war years, my father had closed up the furniture store. Then he had worked for the Consolidated Amusement Company as an upholsterer. You know, all those theaters have those leather seats and backs and all that. And in the, like Princess Theater, Waikiki, Hawaii Theater, they got the largest seat. They had fancy furniture that's made out of different type of hardwood and all that. And it has upholstery and drapery, not drapery material, but tapestry or something like that. So that's where he has worked for 10 years to get his 40 quarters to get his Social Security payment. So he had worked for Consolidated Amusement Company for 10 years, and after that he had retired.
Mm-hmm. I have a question regarding the Koreans in general. They say that after 1910, Korea essentially was having problems regarding their own sense of identity because it was annexed by the Japanese. Was your father or your mother nationalistic, and how did they show it if they were nationalistic?
Well, my father didn't show anything, because when I told him that I was getting married, he said, "Who was it?" And I had to explain to him that she's a Japanese girl. Then at first, my mother, she had to say something against me. And later on, was after that, she just gave in. There was nothing that she could have done. But then all of her friends, they think that I didn't understand, but when they talked with my parents, said, why would our enemy, so you have to marry with Ilbun Saksi. So I had remembered of all those different ladies that told me about that. So I had kept all of that in my mind. Then when their sons and their daughters got married, then they come and tell my mother, said, "Hey, I wish that my daughter or my son is just as good a woman as your daughter-in-law." Oh, then they come and tell me that I've got a good wife and your mother has a good daughter-in-law. But then I told her, "Ajumane, magna tangsin na hagu marahalchige morago keseo. Why happy wenum hagu changa ganago." I said, "See, Ajumane, nugudonji. Adoldunji, Taldunji, Changa Gadunji, Honin Hazunji, Kurunmar Hajumayo. Adol idol is someone, Kurunmar Hajumayo. See, Tangsin idol, Ado, Itetoan, Karachio, Taldu Honingan, Kandami, Itetoan, Karachio. Any chiban, adolinun saramdol, tan saram adol, nugu hagu honin hadu, kurun sung bojumayo."
So you taught them a good lesson. You taught them a good lesson. Oh. And when did you get married?
In 1932.
In 1932. Then you were very close to your parents, and you all lived as a unit. In the same unit. Was your father also a Christian?
Yeah.
Well, he was baptized before he came?
He must have been baptized before he came. You see, actually, before coming to as an immigrant, my father was from the north, from Hangyeongdo. Then as a child, I think he told me at the age of 19, he left home to go and live in Vladivostok in Russia. Worked there as a houseboy. That's why he was able to speak Russian fluently when he came back, when he came over here. And he used to be a houseboy and a cook
Did he ever say for whom?
No.
No.
Only thing that he told me that he told me that he was a houseboy and a cook.
Did he ever say why he really came to Hawaii and what the circumstances were?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that question up. He came. He had planned to leave Vladivostok because during the Sino-Russian war, the Russians thought my father was a Japanese at that time. So they forced him to get away from Vladivostok and go back to Korea.
Since your father had difficulties during the Depression, and since he made the big transition from the city life into a rural community, can you tell me what life was like on a regular basis for him as he went into other areas, including theater work?
Well, the only thing that I can mention is that he was so falling back in his payment of the store rents and so forth. He was getting into debt very deeply. So even at that time, in the year of 1935-36, we at first had prepared to file in bankruptcy. So I had gone to the lawyer's office that was on Main Cam Highway, and I had made up papers to file in bankruptcy to forgive all of the debt I was owed. But then after a couple of days later, I decided not to go through the bankruptcy, because then I had learned that it would be hard for me in the future to establish any kind of bank credit or anything. So finally I told the lawyer that drew up the papers that I'm not going through the bankruptcy. So whatever the fee was, I'm willing to pay you people. Then he told me that, he said, John, he said, with that thought in your mind, that you don't want to go through bankruptcy because I'm thinking of the future reference for me. So he said, well, John, just forget it. You don't owe me anything. So I thanked him for it. And I paid off my father's debt, over $5,000. I had paid by paying monthly. On some accounts, I was paying only $3 a month, $2 a month, because through a court order. See, the only thing, when I had appeared in court, I had pleaded guilty. Then I told the judge that the income that we were having, that I was having, is so little. I have to support my family. But I'm willing to pay $2, $2.50, $4 payment. So that, as long as I was saying that I'm guilty and I'm willing to pay, and I'm only can afford to pay such, the judge puts it down that I'm gonna pay $3 a month until that thing is paid. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, the collection agency cannot or couldn't pressure me to pay more. So after all, I had cleared all of my father's debt.
That's
without bankrupting.
That I'm sure your father was very, very indebted.
For that reason,
to you.
Today I don't have any problem of having a credit, bank credit. Mm-hmm. No trouble. And that's when my son had told me that as long as you can sign your name, don't worry. Mm-hmm.
Did your father and mother become American citizens?
No, they did.
Did your father and mother or mother ever return to Korea?
Only my mother had made a trip to Korea. My father hasn't gone back. He wanted to, but financially he wasn't able.
Mm-hmm. What did your mother say about her return to Korea and back?
Well, the way how she went was that she created a big debt too. See, my father didn't have money to for her passage and all that. She just got in the money from the collection that had been coming in from the different jobs from Schofield. She just said, "I'm going, that's all." So then when she came back, she said that her stepmother and stepbrothers and all that, they're all having a hard time. But then I told her, I said, "Omani," I said, "I know they're having a hard time, but what about us? We are having a hard time too. So forget it." I said, "I won't be able to send even a dollar to them." Mm-hmm. So
Now, where is your mother from?
She's from South, Jeonju, Jeollado. She's from the South.
And she found her stepmother.
Yes, they were corresponding, and finally she went over to meet her stepmother and half-sister too, I think.
Mm-hmm. I had read somewhere where your mother was active in the Korean Women's Relief Society. Do you know what kind of work she did with that society?
Actually, it wasn't a relief society. It was more of this, not Kujohe. Kujohe is social welfare. But it was more of like what the Japanese people have, the kumiai. That is more of a membership. They pay in monthly dues of $5 or $10 per month. And all the different members that attend the meeting, they pay their dues. Then when any one of the member dies, then each one digs out the money for their monthly due. If there were 10 people, that's $100. Then if nobody had died within the past 3-4 months, they put in another $100 or so, matching the $100 today. So the total of $200, they'll give it to the family to help out the expenses of the funeral expense.
Only funeral?
Only funeral.
So that was one of the purposes of that group.
Yeah, mostly all of the so-called Ajumani, though.
Yeah.
They went and joined those clubs. It was more of a woman's gathering anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, since I realize I have a time limitation here, I'm going to ask you a question.
All right.
What event or events made the greatest impact upon you regarding either one of your parents or both of them, which created a turning point in your life? And could you tell me about that?
Turning point?
It could be in your life also. Something that was very important that made an impact upon you, something that was very strong, very powerful.
Actually, Celia don't know the actual meaning of that, is that if it's something that made them really happy
or even yourself, some event, something that happened that was very
well
important.
For my parents, then when they had all of their grandchildren, then great grandchildren, then it's the same thing with me and my wife, to see our grandchildren from youngsters graduating colleges, becoming teachers and pharmacists, architect, licensed architect, and we've got 10 of grandsons, 4 granddaughters, and now we've got 5 great-grandsons. Those are the things that really give us the turning point, as you had mentioned. So now the only thing that I'm hoping and praying for is that this next grandchild that's pregnant now will give us a great-granddaughter. That's asking a little too much, but as for myself, when my wife was pregnant, the only thing I prayed for was giving birth to a normal child that would have 10 fingers, 2 hands and 10 fingers, 2 eyes and everything, whether it was a boy or girl, as long as both the mother and child was all healthy and everything went through. That's all matters. I've known some fathers that had wished that the baby was a boy. And when a daughter came, he just cussed. But then when they finally had a baby boy, the mother passed away. Mm-hmm. So I told him, I said, what good? You got what you really wanted, huh? But look what happened. You lost your wife.
The last question I want to ask you, again, because of time limitation, is where are your parents buried?
Up Nuano. Nuano Memorial Cemetery. Then that's another thing, too. My father and mother, they always were talking about their burial place. And there was a salesman, a Korean man. I forgot his name anyway. So I gave my father the money for down payment and helped him to pay for the 2 burial plots. So then when he made the last payment, I gave him the benefit of making the last payment. Then it was a sigh of relief. He said, at least now I got a place to bury myself and my wife. So they're buried at the Nuano Cemetery, across from Oahu Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Are they buried where all the other Koreans are buried, with all the names in Korean, written in Korean?
There's quite a few. In fact, my sister-in-law's father, parents that used to live across the street, they're buried almost in the same row. Quite a number of people from Waihua, a lot of other Koreans from Honolulu.
This ends the interview with John Young on Kim on July the 11th, 1994.